Hello, my name is Bill Coughlin, and welcome to First Person Civil War Podcast, which retells the stories of the soldiers, officers, and for this episode, Marines, on the ground in the battles of the Civil War. Episode 11 is entitled Second Lieutenant Frederick Tomlinson Pete and the United States Marine Corps at the Siege of Fort Wagner, and relies on Frederick Tomlinson Pete's privately printed letters entitled Civil War Letters and Documents and his book Personal Experiences in the Civil War, both published in 1905. Frederick Tomlinson Pete lived in Brooklyn, New York before the war began and enlisted in Company H of the 7th New York Militia as a private on 26 April 1861, but soon transferred to Company H of the 1st United States Sharpshooters and became a second lieutenant on 16 September 1861. While the regiment trained at Washington, D.C., Second Lieutenant Pete discovered that there was a lieutenant position open in the United States Marine Corps. In a letter to his father, Second Lieutenant Pete explained his desire to join the Marines. Cousin Ned tells me not to give it up, but to write to you and to have it put through, meaning sending in his application. It is a situation, if anything, better than in the common infantry. I believe there is better pay. At all events, there are but two or three regiments of them in the service. You will understand it is one of the best stations in the regular service. For several months, Second Lieutenant Pete heard nothing from the Marines about his application, and departed with the 1st United States Sharpshooters to Virginia, where he saw action during the Peninsula Campaign. On 14 June 1862, as the 1st Sharpshooters camped outside of Richmond, Frederick Tomlinson Pete's application for a second lieutenant position in the Marine Corps was approved. Before he could leave to take this new position in the Marine Corps, the 7 days' battles began, and while fighting at the Battle of Glendale, 30 June 1862, Second Lieutenant Pete was shot in the shoulder, with the bullet eventually lodged in his lungs. He was brought to a field hospital, but was left there as the Union Army retreated toward Malvern Hill and became a prisoner. Second Lieutenant Pete was exchanged on 18 July. While in Washington, D.C., he continued to recover from his wounds, and he assumed his post in the Marine Corps on 8 December 1862. As the Battle of Gettysburg unfolded, he was in Washington, D.C., helping organize the defense of the Capitol. On 23 July 1863, Second Lieutenant Pete and a battalion of Marines departed from Brooklyn Navy Yard for Morris Island, South Carolina, where it would participate in the siege of Fort Wagner. Morris Island is an island that sits at the mouth of Charleston Harbor and relatively close to Fort Sumter. A naval expedition attacked the harbor on 7 April 1863, but was unsuccessful. The Navy concluded that an occupation of Morris Island was required. From there, artillery could assist in the destruction of Fort Sumter and open the harbor to the Navy. Before this could happen, Forts Wagner and Battery Gregg, located on Morris Island, would have to be taken. Brigadier General Quincy A. Gilmore, commander of operations on Morris Island, ordered two separate assaults to take Fort Wagner, the second being the 54th Massachusetts failed assault on 18 July 1863. The next move against Fort Wagner was a siege. Army engineers on Morris Island had already constructed two sap lines, otherwise known as trenches, toward Fort Wagner, the first line being between 3/4 and 1 mile distant, and the second line 700 yards from Fort Wagner. With these trenches completed, plans for a third assault in August were formulated. On 9 August, 2nd Lieutenant Pete, writing in a non-redacted letter to his father, details how the Marines were to perform an amphibious assault on Fort Wagner. Sumter is to be reduced by land batteries and ironclads, after which, or at the same time, Wagner will be attacked by Gilmore in the front, meaning Army infantry, and by our battalion of Marines in the rear. We are to lay alongside of the Ironsides in boats. At a signal, we will land and form on the beach between Wagner and Gregg. After landing, we will storm Wagner in the rear. In our attack, the ironclads will attempt to keep Forts Sumter, Wagner, Gregg, and Cummings Point silent while we land and form on the beach. If the expedition is not successful, we will all be gobbled up or killed. For you see, we can't retreat, or we will get into Fort Gregg and Cummings Point. This Marine amphibious assault did not come to fruition. Brigadier General Gilmore summed up the advance. From this period forward, the fire from James Island, Wagner, Gregg, and Sumter, and from the enemy's sharpshooters in Fort Wagner, was severe and almost unceasing. Indeed, on the 10th, our advance was stopped entirely from this cause, and it became a question of grave doubt whether we could push forward our trenches much farther with the advantages so entirely on the side of the enemy. It seems certain conditions of the frontal infantry assault had to be met before the Marines made their amphibious landing. The Confederate defense was too strong for the assault, and the landings never happened. Given the stubbornness of Fort Wagner, Brigadier General Gilmore had to rethink operations on Morris Island. At this period of the siege, it was not supposed that it would be necessary to sap entirely up to Fort Wagner in order to ensure its capture. For on the presumption that Fort Sumter would be demolished from positions which we then held, it was considered probable that a complete investment of Morris Island at night could be established and maintained by picket boats. Brigadier General Gilmore resolved to dig more sap trenches to accommodate even more artillery, and 2nd Lieutenant Pete and the Marine Battalion would join in the siege operations. Work began on a third trench, which was 370 yards, or less than a quarter mile, from Fort Wagner. Of the 12 batteries of heavy artillery and mortars brought in to occupy these trenches, only 4 batteries would engage Fort Wagner. The rest would bombard Fort Sumter, with naval gunfire engaging both Wagner and Sumter. On 17 August 1863, the bombardment began. 5 trenches in total were dug toward Fort Wagner. As the Marine Battalion assisted in the construction of these lines, 2nd Lieutenant Pete took note of the level of destruction brought upon Fort Sumter. After a time, Sumter looked like an earthwork. The bricks or stones of the walls were hammered into one mass of masonry. I saw the flag on Sumter shot away 3 times. All this time, we were pushing our parallels nearer to Wagner. He then spoke of the Confederate Fort Johnson, which was in the area, with its mortars directing its fire at the Marines and soldiers digging the trenches. In the night, it was a beautiful sight to see the twinkling of the fuse as the bombs went into the air. They looked like stars. Up, up they would go in a curve to a great height. then as slowly come twinkling down, and when near the earth, would burst into flame. One Confederate soldier even took on an air of defiance toward the Union artillery that pounded Fort Wagner. There was a man, and a brave man too, who used to sit in a chair on the upper works of Wagner every day in the afternoon, apparently reading a paper, entirely careless of our fire. Day after day, our gunners sought to knock him over, but he sat there apparently unconcerned. But at last, a shell or shot hit him. It was while the general was on the lookout, watching the bombardment, and he sent his congratulations to the gunner. But it seemed too bad to kill him, even if he did show his contempt of us by his actions. Despite the amount of artillery brought to bear against them, the Confederates in Fort Wagner still had the ability to fire directly at the Marines and soldiers in the trenches until they vacated it the night of 6 September 1863. Second Lieutenant Pete, preparing for the 7 September assault, noted such a heavy fire from Wagner. Not a man during the day preceding the evacuation could put his head above the ramparts. In the early hours of 7 September 1863, 2nd Lieutenant Pete and the Marine Battalion, being in the front rank, would make their assault on Fort Wagner from their trench, which by his estimation was only 30 feet away. At 2:30 a.m., the long roll was beaten, and soon we were marching on Wagner, which by his account was 4 o'clock. By daylight, we entered it, having endured a pretty brisk shelling from Moultrie while on the march. News came to the brigade doing duty last night in the trenches by an Irishman who swam from Wagner through the creek to our trenches that the Rebs were evacuating. Second Lieutenant Pete and the Marine Battalion halted before Fort Wagner to verify the claim of it being empty. 6 men were immediately sent into Wagner, then 20 more followed. Creeping in the moonlight, they stealthily approached, silently glided down the ditch, and soon were peering over the ramparts, waiting here for a moment to see that all was clear. Fort Wagner took a heavy beating. On 5 and 6 September, 13 heavy artillery pieces, which comprised of 1 300-pounder, 3 200-pounder, and 9 100-pounder Parrott rifles, fired 1,411 projectiles, an estimated 75 tons of explosives at Fort Wagner. Second Lieutenant Pete took stock of the damage. When I reached the fort, I was surprised to see the havoc our big shells had made. The ramparts were badly torn, and some guns dismounted, and the ditches seemed full of 15-inch shells, which were fired by our monitors, which were Navy vessels. I then went into the bomb proofs. Here I saw a dead soldier. He was well dressed in gray, and was a remarkably fine-looking man. As I was looking at him, a man near me picked up a rebel flag. I saw it had a cord attached to it, and warned him to be careful. I took the line and followed it into the magazine. I presume it was expected some of us would grab the flag and haul at the rope, and in doing so, blow up the magazine. But I cut the rope on seeing where it led. Though Fort Wagner was captured, the fighting would continue, and the Marine Battalion was tasked to assault Fort Sumter on 8 September. 2nd Lieutenant Pete volunteered to lead 100 Marines as part of a combined landing with 500 soldiers. But another officer was selected, and the landings were unsuccessful. The overall Union effort to take possession of Charleston Harbor and Fort Sumter failed. Second Lieutenant Pete and the Marines moved to Folly Island, which was close to Morris Island, in early October, and remained there until he was ordered to return to New York City. Second Lieutenant Pete volunteered for service on the steamer Niagara and was tasked to hunt down the Alabama, a Confederate ship operating in the Atlantic. While off the coast of Newfoundland, they received news that the Alabama sank while fighting the USS Kearsarge off Cherbourg, France. While underway, he was promoted to first lieutenant in 1864 and continued to serve on the USS Niagara, which was in Spain when the war ended. Frederick Tomlinson Pete continued his service in the United States Marine Corps until 28 August 1869, when he resigned his commission. After his service, he returned to Brooklyn, where he became active in several veterans organizations, such as the Military Order of the Loyal Legion, the Military Order of Colonial Wars, and the Army and Navy Clubs. Frederick Tomlinson Pete privately published his book, Personal Experiences in the Civil War, and correspondence, Civil War Letters and Documents, in 1905, and both documents serve as sources for this episode. I found it interesting that Second Lieutenant Pete sent a letter to his father that detailed how the Marine Battalion would conduct their amphibious assault. It was certainly a different era in terms of censorship of letters from the front. Phrases such as "loose lips sink ships" were not commonplace until World War II, so one has to wonder if censorship of the mail in the Civil War was even considered. Thank you for listening to the 11th episode. The link to Frederick Tomlinson Pete's book and letters are now available on the podcast website, firstpersoncivilwarpodcast.com. On Facebook, Instagram, X, and LinkedIn this week, you will find a picture of Second Lieutenant Pete in the Marine Corps and a 300-pound Parrot rifle within the trenches, which fired 88 rounds, totaling 11 tons of explosives, at Fort Wagner between 5 and 6 September 1863. Links to all social media sites are at the top of each web page. Please give them a follow and connect with me on LinkedIn. If you like listening to the podcast, please consider following, sharing, and writing a review on your podcasting app. And if you know someone that is interested in the Civil War or military history, tell them about the podcast. Private Edward A. Moore, 1st Rockbridge Artillery of Jackson's Division, provides next week's first-person account at the Battle of Second Manassas. My name is Bill Coghlan, and thank you for listening to First Person Civil War Podcast.